Welcome to the Voices of Grambling, a digital oral history podcast, a series exploring the rich, nuanced history of Grambling State University, the city of Grambling, and the people who make it. This series is a collaborative project between students and faculty of the History Department of Grambling State University, as well as faculty from the University of Arkansas. The Voices of Grambling, a digital oral history project, has been made possible in part
by a grant from the Albert LePage Center for History and the Public Interest at Villanova University. This season is part of their Cities and Historical Perspective thematic investigation and will focus on the economic, racial, and social history of the city of Grambling through conversations with former business owners and city officials.
Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this podcast do not necessarily represent those of
the LePage Center for History and the Public Interest, the National Endowment for the Humanities, the Social Science Research Council, the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities.
I am Malaya Baptiste, and I'm here with Ms. Bowen to interview her for my senior research project. Our first question is, what was the year you established your business, and what prompted the start of the business?
Well, I started the business in 1984. And what prompted me is I was supposed to come. My son came for a summer stay, and he met friends and wanted to go to school here. Yeah. I was working, and he had broken his fingers, had a little accident on one of those little motor bike scooters in the park. Somebody ran over him on the bike and just smashed the bones in his hand. He had no skin on his hand. So my mom came out, and she wanted him to come back and stay with her while he healed and everything, because I was working. So anyway, after he stayed that summer, you know, he had met friends and everything and wanted to stay. And I was kind of missing him. So I decided to move back here.
And I know you said that, as you said, you were working. What was your occupation before you moved here and started your business?
I had two jobs. I was working as a correctional officer at State Penitentiary, and then I was also working as a probation officer.
That's a big jump.
Yes, because I was doing both full time.
And if you mind not asking, what made you not like want to continue on that work while you moved here? Was it just change of pace, or was it something else? What made you not want to continue to be a probation officer?
Oh, I did when I came here.
You did?
I did. I was a probation officer, the first probation officer for Lincoln Parish Sheriff Department.
What products did you sell, and where did you buy your inventory? Did you mostly buy like at the stores in Grambling, or did you have to go like into Ruston or order stuff from different places to get inventory for your business?
First question, what we sold. We sold fried chicken, tasty fried chicken, French fries. We sold coleslaw some of the time. Jalapeno peppers, drinks, fried fish. Now, those were the main things. Now, when I first started, we sold hot lunches. And that was only during lunchtime. And for a hot lunch, we had we always sold maybe like two or three meats, two or three vegetables, and sometimes one dessert, sometimes two desserts.
So like you said, like it started off as just a lunch thing. Did you see like it was mostly like a community thing, or did you see like students from the university coming in?
It was already chicken. Yeah. And we started during serving lunch.
Yeah.
And there were lots of faculty and students. Lots of people coming from Ruston, from different work areas there. So it was always packed during lunchtime.
And also, the second part of the question, how did you like
inventory? Okay. We ordered from two different companies, and one company came three times a week out of Shreveport. then another company came twice a week. And sometimes they deviated and only came once a week from Dallas. So that's, and when I ran short of something, then I usually went to Monroe to Sam's Club.
How do you feel that your business played a role in Grambling's community?
It kind of became really, I guess, maybe a hangout spot for students. And not just students, people would come from, there were people who had been students prior and then had graduated or whatever and gone back to their hometowns. But sometimes on Saturdays they would plan, I guess, maybe just a little road trip.
Just come back.
And they would come back and they would call maybe halfway and say, well, we're coming from Knowlton, we're coming from Vidalia, all these different places. And we want to put our order in and have it ready for whatever time. And so they would come and that was just how, I guess, they were spending their Saturday hanging out. They would come here and hang out, meet friends, other people that they knew here, but they always met at Tasty's. And then they would also tell me, well, this one ordered, remember such a so-and-so, that person, they wanted this, so don't fix it until whatever time they're gonna leave. They'll call and let me know when they're getting ready to leave. That time, you know, they know on weekends we stayed open maybe like till 2 o'clock. And so they would want to come and pick up their order to take back to somebody.
Did you have any other business ventures that you went into besides Tasty's?
No, I didn't. But when I first got here, I worked at my mom and dad's grocery store. You know, I had never done any kind of business like this, worked in the restaurant or store business. But I worked in their grocery store. It was called Big G Supermarket. And they had another business. But anyway, I never worked in that one because right away I purchased their Tasty business. It had a different name, but anyway, I purchased it and I started calling it Tasty Chicken, and the students started calling it Tasties.
Do you remember whenever your parents opened their grocery store?
Yes, 84.
84.
Well, my mom, she worked at Grambling State for a long, long time, and she was personnel director for years and years. And so when she left there, you know, she's not the type of person to do nothing. Between she and my dad, they Tigers Inn. They opened up Big B Supermarket, already had the chicken place. Big B Supermarket, Tigers Inn, car dealership. And they ended up opening, somebody bought that place where they had Tiger Inn. So they had to give that up. And so they moved that business to a business right behind my building. Competition.
Right. Can you describe an obstacle you might have faced being an African-American business owner?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. First of all, that was right, you know, after the Vietnam War. And so a lot of people were returning. But, you know, they were not considered heroes. But a lot of Vietnam people came, just a big fluctuation. I know this because of this area, but I'm sure it was all over. It was very, very easy for them to get funding to start businesses. But it was super, super hard for me as a black woman and a young one at that, because I was in my, I was 30. And so it was super hard, and unmarried. So for a single woman and black woman, there were no business loans to be given out. Not to me.
Can you think about any other problems you might have had as well?
I can, because I did a lot of dealing with men, and men seem to think that women know less and to try to take advantage of them. And so, you know, if you know what you ordered, and sometimes, you know, I was away from the business because I worked every day. I came in early in the mornings and opened up and set up the register, different things. And then I had to get to my job, my other job. I know what, you know, I did the ordering. I did the ordering by phone. And so things that would come in, and when I wasn't present, so much of the stuff was not there, you know, and they're saying, well, they left it. Maybe the employee, I needed to ask my employees what happened to it. Mm-hmm. But I was always having problems with like that. And things happen, you know, there's a lot of upkeep on a business. Electrical problems, plumbing problems, air conditioning problems, everything you can think of.
Yeah.
People seem to take advantage by charging enormous rates, you know, not for what they would charge somebody else, but because it was me, they would just charge outrageous fees constantly. And then I noticed that what they were doing is they were seeing to it that they would be called back.
Yeah, like not fixing it all. But
not fixing it right, or fixing something where it'll just work for a little while, or doing something wrong where maybe this will work about a couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks, and then she's going to have this problem, and she'll call me right back. They seem to set it up, you know, where you're going to have to constantly call them. Even when it came to spraying for insects, you know, you set up a plan, year plan. And so, you know, if they're coming every month, then you shouldn't have any problems.
I know you said that your parents are already own businesses and stuff. So how long did it take for you to see, like, an influx of people coming into your business? Like, did it start off slow, or did, like, you immediately have crowds come in?
Well, when my parents had the business, they closed up at 10 o'clock. And so since they closed at 10, they would have to shut it down like 9 for cleanup time. And so people were just coming out. Students were just coming out at 10. It was not a lot of business. As a matter of fact, when I first came, I was working there as well as at the supermarket. And I could be there by myself and run it.
You know, because before Rustin had got like all developed and all these bigger companies moved in, like Gremlin was the stores that was in Gremlin were the only thing that was supporting the community. But then when you have students starting to get vehicles, and you have people starting to, you know, people in Rustin starting to be more open to accepting Black people into their businesses, I was starting to look at that shift dynamic.
Yes, because yes, certain things happen when people in the town, maybe like the police department, don't want them hanging out.
Yeah,
and they say they hang out too much, and they hung out around Tasty's. So they would want them always cleared out. And then another thing, you know, we had just certain things that brought a lot of business, which was always homecoming.
Yeah.
And then March Madness, I don't know what you call it now.
Yes, that was like March Madness.
Different groups, singing groups, coming in.
Yeah.
And that would bring people from not just the students, but students from communities and maybe all over Louisiana. And some people would come.
Yeah, that's actually this coming week for Spring Fest. That's this week.
Okay. And some people would come, some of the alumni might come from California, New York, Chicago, wherever, for that.
Yeah.
And so the problem with the police, that the police had, I guess they just wanted to make things easier on themselves. Yeah. So what they would do is they would seal off the main highway. They would seal off R.W. Jones, where you couldn't turn there to come down in the village. They would seal off anywhere where you could come to the village. They would seal that off because they wanted people to, once everything was over, they wanted to get them out as quickly as possible. So they had, they were directing them directly to Highway 80, directly to I-20. But they wouldn't let them come down in Gramlin proper. And so that took away all of our business. That meant that people were going to stop and get something to eat.
But just not in Gramlin.
So, right. So that took all of the business to Ruston, for them to get all of the food business. I guess they got liquor business here because there was a liquor store at Clark's, and where they could buy liquor and Shopping Stops, you know. And they used to have another liquor store that was right at the freeway, way before your time, just before you get to Mount Olive. So on the opposite side of the freeway. And so people could buy alcohol, but so that supported Gramlin's revenue, but not, you know, down in the village. And that's where people wanted to be. That's where they wanted to meet friends, was down in the village. So they had to make arrangements to meet their friends and get together in Ruston. Destroys everything. You know, it takes the social out of it.
Yeah.
You know, people want to have relationship with each other. They want to, it's just not just a matter of hanging out, but that's a part of our culture, yeah,
supporting the Gramlin economy.
And then we had several food businesses. You know, the pizza that's over on R.W. Jones was originally in the village. And then we had, I would say, in the village, we had about four or five different places. They won't let them go anywhere else. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, that was really a mayor and town council problem that should have been dealt with, because that's sending Gramlin's revenue,
yeah,
which is very, very important. It's not like we don't need the revenue, but sending their revenue to Ruston.
So do you believe that the partnership between Gramlin State University and also just the town of Gramlin, do you think that was really an important factor into the success of your business?
Absolutely. Because we constantly got a lot of student business. That was our main source of business. And faculty, you know, daytime.
I came across a story about how, like, in the 80s, like, that was a time where people were kind of pushing to, like, support black businesses, have your businesses be pro-black. And there was a story about a Sonic that was in Gramlin. I did not know they had a Sonic.
They did.
And it got burned. Do you feel like that kind of had a positive and negative effect as well?
I do. Because, you know, you have to look at the age groups. Okay, now, if you have a mayor, you know, I have to say the mayor because I'm and council persons, because I'm thinking about the leadership of the town. That's what makes a difference. If you're only concerned about your age group and pleasing your age group, and usually mayors were, you know, older then. And so, you know, you want to please the people in your community, but you only want to please those that are your peers. You're not thinking about the young people that are up and coming. Mm-hmm. You don't take their growth and what's necessary for their growth into the situation. I remember when I first came here, I came to start the business. But since I couldn't get my business going, that's how I was prompted to buy my parents' business. I was going to open a business called G-Town Jeans, which means that I would be catering to basically students, college students, and high school students. And so I had come here several times to check, to make sure that I could find a location, get it set up, put my deposits down, sign, you know, do the paperwork and everything, because I wanted that done before I got here. Also, I wanted to already have my products here. So before I got here, I had ordered from the LA Garment District and in New York, their Garment District. So, and also Dallas. So when I got here, I had it set up where it would get here maybe a couple of weeks or so after I got here and got set up. And here I was with all of this product.
Nowhere to put it.
And nowhere to put it.
Yeah.
Nowhere to sell it. And so they kept bringing, and I had to just, you know, stop it. I have, the house was just full rooms of product. I found out after being just strung along for months that the problem was they didn't want other businesses coming in because they saw that as competition. It really was not a competition because, you know, if one group is being catered to here and then another group is being catered to here, you know, but that was a problem, not wanting competition. Not only, well, in every area, well, I can't say not wanting competition. There were people that I guess were in charge, in leadership positions of the community that didn't have the concern of the whole community, just their age group. And once you get to be their age group, you're not worried about, concerned about the progression of the community, which means that everybody have to be inclusive, just your set. So you're either retired or close to retired, and everything has to be geared, catering to you, then where does that leave everybody else? You know, it's the young people that are gonna mature and be in charge one day. And so you're on your way out.
Yeah.
And you're holding things just as is because this is the way you like it. All nice and quiet. Just leave things to stay just as they are because you're satisfied with that. People, for some reason, don't want an influx. They're afraid of an influx of businesses coming here. They think that they'll take over. I remember when, you know, we were asking about, you know, there were discussions. Every time somebody wanted to do a business here,
it was
voted down.
It was a debate.
It was voted down. No. They didn't want anybody coming in here. And so then, you know, when you decide that, well, you get somebody that do want growth, then you have to make preparation because you have to think about infrastructure and all of these different things that play into it. And if you don't have those things in place, then you're gonna be passed over. This might be an excellent area.
Yeah.
But if you don't have certain things in place, then no. I want to keep the students in bondage. I know when I was here, people would always tell me about the music. You know, people from the community might come in and say something about the music. Because, what's the name from Dallas?
I know we had like Erica Badu.
Yes, she was a student here. And so every time she came back here or was passing through by on I-20, you know, I think she was supposed to be a vegetarian, but she'd have them order her chicken, and call it in so that it would be ready at a certain time. And she didn't just order for herself, she ordered for, you know, a whole big group. And even in her song, Two Piece and a Pepper, that was her order. And every year since I closed up, people coming close to homecoming just start calling and having other people call me, get in contact with me, even coming by my house, you know, to ask me, would I please just open up for homecoming?
Yeah.
You know, so that they would feel like the old times.
Yeah.
You know, and when I think about it, some of the older leadership didn't want the music, and they didn't want there used to be a club, too, in Gremlin.
I didn't know that.
And every time I would hear it, because, you know, they would shut the club down early because people would complain about their parking on their grass. You know, the grass runs all the way out through the ditch, you know, to the road. And people, so if you're parking on the, what do you call that?
The side road.
Right beside the road. Really, that's public.
That's public.
But, you know, they'd be calling in saying that people are parking on their grass. And so they shut the club down. And so everybody just rush in, you know, like to Tasty's. You know, I hear them talking and complaining and everything. But, you know, I felt like let them be them. We played music.
Yeah.
And we played the music that they liked. I didn't play the music with all of the cursing. You know, they had revised versions. And so I played the music, and they don't like their music soft.
Yeah.
I let them play it loud. I mean, I let the people work in there, turn it where, you know, they could enjoy it. So that meant that they had to talk loud. But that's okay. I don't mind them talking loud, you know? But then, you know, other people feel like, well, this is what causes them to louder. You know, we had a problem, a louthering problem. That means you drive away your business. If they come in and expect them to be able to chill out and talk with their friends, you know, you don't want to feel like, well, you have to go, you can only come in and spend your money, but then you have to keep it moving and go somewhere else and fellowship with your friends. You know, that's not right, you know, and that's not really delivering the service. And so, you know, we were not really allowed the service that, to give the service, provide the service that we really should have been able to provide. And doing so would have kept businesses in business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But thank you so much for talking to me about this. That was some good knowledge that I had. You told me some things I did not know. I did not know that Gremlin had a club.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for speaking to me.
Mm-hmm. You're quite welcome.
You've been listening to The Voices of Grambling, a digital oral history podcast, a production of the students and faculty of the Grambling State University History Department, along with faculty at the University of Arkansas. Be sure to listen in to one of our other episodes, and if you have a voice you would like to share or have a nomination for a voice that needs to be heard, please contact the History Department of Grambling State University for more information.